off season.
Hello.
We're talking off season.
Welcome in, kids, to show number 49 of the Pucknologists, wrapping up the season that was for the San Jose Sharks for 2017-2018. Thank you all for checking us out here on TealTownUSA.com. As always, subscribe to our channels. We would appreciate it. As always, I'm your host, AJ_Strong, on all the soch. And with me, on one side of the U.S., Rocket Backhander.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rocket Backhander. I'll be your in-flight hostess for this evening. Please make sure all your valuables are stowed either beneath your seats or above in the overhead compartments. Our stewardesses will be with you shortly. Take your drink order as soon as we get to cruising altitude. And thank you for flying Rocket Backhander Airlines.
And as Rocket provides you the fluff and fold, we bring the starch from Hockey Jerk.
What's up?
Right.
Starchy.
So, wrapping up the second round, the final series the Sharks unfortunately would see in the postseason. Sharks played themselves 6 games, and guess what? Did not win 4. Lost game 1, won game 2, lost game 3, won game 4, then proceeded to lose games 5 and 6. So let's just hit these quick. Game 1, we know what happened. Sharks goals in 92nd during the first 6 minutes of the period. The Knights would get 10 power plays in this game. And Evander Kane would be given a major penalty in a game misconduct during the third period for cross-checking Belmar after the whistle and would end up getting a suspension for Game 2. Now, the funny thing is that a little later in this series, somebody else basically pulled the same thing, but no suspension, no game misconduct, no nothing. So, Jerk, game 1 for you, that must have been fun.
See, I record the show in my bedroom, but if I had the freedom to move about, I would bring my microphone to my bathroom and flush the toilet and just let you all listen to it, because that's what I think of when I remember this game. I mean, 10 times they're killing a penalty, you know, guys are getting pissed and they're just attacking players. And, you know, like you said, letting in 3 goals in, you know, 90 seconds. I mean, that's, you know, that's not how you respond from 8 days off. B, that's not how you show up for a playoff game, especially against a team who has been as potent all year as Vegas has. And thankfully, the Sharks would burn the tape on that one and move on with life. But still, that's not a good way to get things rolling, especially when, at least in my eyes, the Sharks had a lot to prove in this round.
Yeah, absolutely. Not the way you want to start, especially after you had a week off. But completely agree. I'd be tossing that tape into that volcano in Hawaii. Rocket, how about you?
I wouldn't even care if it was a Hawaiian volcano. I would find a volcano in Iceland, maybe, or even take it over to Yellowstone and dump it in a hot geyser to watch it disintegrate before my very eyes. Look, I'm going to be honest here. I turned it off after 3. It's not that I didn't want to hang in there until the bitter end, but I knew immediately that there was no turning around from how they were going, and that the 7-day break was not doing the boys any good. So just to let them handle their own and to not give myself too many of the feels, I simply shut it off. I kept track of my Twitter feed, so I was still very much plugged into the game, but I just visually, I couldn't deal with the crowd noise. I just couldn't deal with any of it. And this is not the first time during playoffs that this has happened to me. I've watched a couple of playoff games live, actually, in the arena, where I've had to have my headphones in listening to like some other really slow, depressing, sad music or something, because there's just too much energy and I have a really difficult time channeling that out. But it was, how do I say this? I think that the Sharks took from the sweep with the Ducks a little bit too much confidence in their game and their system. They just weren't afraid enough of what Vegas is capable of. And Vegas took full advantage of it.
Yeah, the boys clearly not ready. I was actually at the watch party at San Pedro for this, and it was amazing how fast it started to empty out after the first period. I'm going to be honest with you. And I stayed in until the end of the second. And even after that, I said, okay, you know, I went full blown Cartman and, you know, screw you guys. I'm getting
you. Me, yeah. So, you, yeah.
Yeah. So we move on to game two. Sharks would be victorious in this one. However, it would take two overtime periods for it to happen after giving up two goals to William Karlsson, which were some pretty sweet goals, let me tell you. The Sharks would pot three in the second and take the lead, finally. However, Marchessault would look to win it for Vegas at 6:58 of the first overtime, but the goal was overturned after the situation room had determined that Marsh had interfered with Jones in the crease. And so Logan Couture would get the winner on the power play in double overtime. This is one where the power play really helped the Sharks in this one. Rocket, I mean, what do you think was that goalie interference?
You know, this has been a question that all of us have asked each other throughout the season to just try to put a clear-cut definition on goaltender interference so that we could all be on the same page insofar as the league is concerned. And as you know, and as I know, there is no such thing as a clear-cut definition of goaltender interference. They have a set of there's some moose bones that have like little carvings in them, maybe some black marks from where they used to play stick hockey or like street hockey with them. What they do is they put them inside of a goalie mask and they shake them around and then they toss them on the floor and they read them. And as they're reading them, that's how they determine whether or not goaltender interference actually occurred. It is a mystery. Finding out who killed JonBenet Ramsey would be easier than trying to define goaltender interference. Who killed Nicole Brunson? I don't know. But I can't tell you what goaltender interference is. I could find out where Amelia Earhart is, and I still wouldn't be able to tell you about goaltender interference. That's how much. I can't tell you whether or not it was interference.
Well, the guys in Toronto really have too much time on their hands. Hockey Jerk, I mean, what did you – I mean, at least the Sharks finally won a game for you, game two.
Yeah, I thought they started out really well, and I didn't really feel nervous when Vegas was up 2-0 solely on the fact that the Sharks had played pretty well to start. They controlled the play a lot, and they weren't getting anything past Fleury, but they were definitely getting their chances, and they, as a whole, looked like they had just tightened up their defensive game from game one. But, you know, you asked Rocket about Marchessault's goal in overtime, and I got to be honest, if I'm the Situation Room, I think that's a goal. You know, the to me, and this is kind of how I looked at it, is, you know, the contact with Jones, I could see from the referee's position where it might look like Jones's blocker got tugged on by Marchessault. But if you look from the overhead, Jones made it a point to shove Marchessault out of the way. And if you ask me, that's instigating contact.
See, this is where go ahead.
I was just going to say, I believe we saw the same thing with Fleury in game three.
Yeah, so. Where Fleury tried to, you know, push Logan Couture like off of a cliff and, you know, got challenged, was not goalie interference. So, like I said, if I'm in the war room, to me, it's a goal. But at the same time, it's nice to see, you know, the Sharks get a break, especially when you consider how many you know, how many situations, rightfully so or not, that the Sharks were, you know, the victims of.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps that also had something to do with it. Or perhaps Toronto was just having too much fun staying in the heads of both sides of coaching in this matchup. And they said, so is it an interference or not, eh? Well, it looked interference to me. Well, maybe, eh? But I still want this game to go. So let's just have him go. Okay. Let's mess with him, eh? Okay. Cheers. You know, like, and yeah. What do the moose bones say?
well, remember how late this is in Toronto. So,
I know.
This is a case of either guys were, you know, the guys in Toronto may be a little dopey, or the fact that they're like, no, we still got more Labatt in the beer fridge, boys. We can let this go for another period or so.
Oh, sure. Tim Hortons opens up in 20 minutes, eh? We're fine.
Right. Yeah. So we go on to game three, another one that would have to be decided in extras. The Sharks would finally get the first goal in a game, and then they would give up three straight goals before rallying back to go to overtime. And to be honest, I thought after the Sharks got the lead in that one, I really thought that they were going to take it all the way, and that, of course, was not to be the case. Had to go to overtime, and Couture just absolutely denied in overtime. I mean, I was, my jaw was hanging open that Fleury stopped him. William Karlsson, again, I mean, I would call, okay, you know, call me wrong if you'd like. Everybody else does. Hockey jerk. It feels like Karlsson, for me, was like the MVP of the series.
Yeah, he absolutely was. And I would say he's probably been the Golden Knights MVP of the whole year. I mean, you know, he was in a very limited bottom six role with the Anaheim Ducks a few years ago, and then in the same capacity with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And, you know, now he comes over to Vegas where he's top, their top line center. He's playing power play. He's playing penalty kill, and he's playing, you know, with some pretty good shooters, you know, whether it's Riley Smith or whether it's the real deal, James Neal. And, you know, I think he's benefited from playing from those guys. I think he's also benefited from just playing more ice time in general. I mean, you know, 16 goals in parts of three seasons up to 40, I think 42 or 43 goals in a single year. I mean, it's an impressive uptick, and it's definitely MVP worthy material. And, you know, he was kind of a guy that you had to be worried about. I mean, especially even going back to the regular season, it seemed like every time the Sharks played the Golden Knights, Karlsson was always, you know, factoring in somehow. And I mean, it wasn't that long ago that he pulled the disrespectful hurdle move shorthanded on a breakaway. So
and that was a far different situation. I mean, he pulled that when the game was tied, not exactly when their team was up by like five goals.
Exactly. And I think he's kind of got that quick surprise factor that I, you know, alluded to last time we recorded, that the Golden Knights appear to have as a whole. And, you know, I agree with you. Definitely the MVP. I mean, he got the game winner in this game, put up two goals in game two as well. And I could be wrong. I believe he put up a goal in the elimination game as well. Could be wrong there.
But, I mean, just an absolute stud. And no, Karlsson did not have one in the elimination, but he had an assist on the first goal of that game. But well,
the game-winning goal.
Well, what would end up being the game winner? Absolutely. Rocket, your takeaway from game three overtime loss.
Game three overtime loss showed me that the Sharks, even though they were able to rally back from a deficit, did not have the comfort of playing less than 100% perfect against this team during the entire 60-minute span. You could have a 20-minute lapse and they would be up on you by three. You know, I don't know why I'm still talking with this damn Canadian accent. It was difficult for me, but like I said, I think that making it to round two is great, but looking at how easily they got through the first round, I think it just instilled in them a false, and instilled in the fans a false sense of confidence in this matchup. And it was just this prolonged sad farewell. And I don't know how else to say it. Like, I knew going into this that it was not a favorable matchup for the Sharks. I knew that if they were 100% healthy and if they played 100% perfect hockey against Vegas and Vegas made two or three big errors in every game, that they would be capable of getting out of the series. I knew that. But, I mean, the injury bug caught up with them. They made some really, really boneheaded gaffes. They lost control of their emotions and they stopped playing their game. They started playing Anaheim's game, which was weird. I was bummed that they didn't get the overtime win, because I figured that if they had such luck getting through two overtimes the night before, the game before, that they would be able to repeat it. You know, it's like, okay, we've been here, no problem, shake it off, onto the next. But no, the gods just weren't with them.
Yeah, it was definitely a tough one. I really thought the Sharks should have had been able to pull out the victory in game three. They definitely had enough opportunities, but could not finish. But in game four, the Sharks would get a 4-0 victory. And in this one, the Sharks did damn near every single thing perfectly in what was a very even game statistics. I mean, like, the face-off circle was almost even. Both teams got the same amount of power play, same amount of shots on goal, same amount of penalty minutes. I mean, just everything was so even. But the Sharks, Jerk, were just on lockdown in this one.
Absolutely they were. And that, for me, that was really encouraging to see, because the previous game, game three, where they battled back just so much to tie it up, and then going down in overtime like that, like, it was honestly, it was a kick in the ass. Like, you see them, Hurdle gets that goal with less than 2 minutes left, and, you know, I'm sure the roof of, you know, the Shark Tank exploded, and, you know, I nearly fell out of my chair at home, so that kind of gives you an idea of how I'm feeling. And then, you know, Carlson brings it up the ice on a, you know, a defensive miscue. And I'm not going to say who the miscue was on, because it shouldn't matter. It was still a miscue. And, you know, Jones just, you know, muffs it, and Carlson buries it. And now you come into this game and the Sharks completely put that out of their mind. They realized that they're still at home. They needed to get the ball rolling. They needed to get back in the series. And they did that. Donskoy had a goal. I believe Marcus Sorensen had another goal.
Donskoy had that coast to coast with like 5-6 seconds left in the first.
Mm-hmm. And you know what, kind of, you know, making me eat crow a little bit that morning. I said, if I'm DeBoer, I'm scratching Donskoy, and he scored. So, you know, maybe I've got
you weren't the only one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But
that coast to coast was nice though.
It was very nice. And considering that he was playing on a bum hip and a bum foot, I mean, that's pretty impressive. But it was nice to see the Sharks battle back in this game, and, like we've seen all season, not fold over when they face adversity. They did everything they possibly could to keep themselves in it.
Yeah, and Rock, I mean, this is the one where this is like the one really bad game that the Knights had. I mean, even Belmar with 10 penalty minutes in this one.
Yeah, but this is what I was talking about, is that this is the kind of game that the Sharks needed to have since the first game in the series. They needed to play 100% on their game. They needed to have all of the notes that coaching could give them, and they needed to take every second of this game seriously. And it finally paid off a couple games too late. But, I mean, this was the game that gave me hope that, okay, this is possible. Mm-hmm. This is possible. The boys have finally understood that they need to play 60 minutes full force, complete perfection, Bolshoi ballet hockey, and not this little discotheque backroom boogie hockey. And the Knights had several gaffes that the Sharks are able to take advantage of. That's great. And the series would have ended much differently if we would have had a repeat of that night. But, you know, such as playoff hockey.
I feel you. And so we move on to game five. And again, this is another one I think the Sharks just really, really could have had after they woke up. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Sharks would lose would lose this one 5-3, give up four straight goals, but all of a sudden would pot three straight in the third, giving everybody hope. Everybody thinking, oh, they can do that. I mean, they pulled Jones, put in Dell. Okay, they can get, you know, a game-tying tally once they pull him in the final couple minutes. It felt like it was going to be another OT. And then, of course, at the end there, the Knights would get the empty netter from Marchessault, which was actually kind of a ballsy play when you think about it, Rocket, because at that point, if you miss the net, I mean, that's a face-off in your own end. You know the Sharks are going to pull them. I was a little surprised that Marsh went for that rather than just, you know, going for the easy dump.
How soon did they pull Jones with, like, over 2 minutes left, yeah?
I don't know, 210, 205, somewhere in there?
I don't know how much time was left, but I do know that there was too much time left.
Yeah. That's my point, is that they panicked and went full Roy. And you never go full Roy.
Yeah, I feel like it was maybe 220, 250.
That's way too much time.
And then that's the thing that irks me about that, too, is for like the last 9 minutes of game time, the Sharks literally had all the momentum. And then to pull their goalie with so much time left, I mean, you know, they had the offensive zone faceoff. Why not see what you can do at 5-5 and then go from there? You know, maybe you get down to minute 30, minute 20, minute 10, take a timeout, figure it out, and then go for it. You know what I mean?
Completely agree, but such is PDB.
And to be, you know, to be devil's advocate, I think when you rattle off three goals in 6 minutes, I think your adrenaline is through the roof and you sort of just panic.
Yeah. Possibly. Yeah.
There's no way to know for sure.
Yeah. Well, we'll move on to the final game, and this one, I don't know if this one hurt more than game one, but this guy, despite just getting this, I think this is the one that does hurt the most. Besides it being the eventual series loss, the Sharks had more scoring chances. They put two off the pipe. They sent two through the crease. He had at one point Fleury looking like a Mexican jumping bean, literally jumping in the air so a puck wouldn't bounce off of him and possibly into the net. And you do have to give it up for Fleury for this game and for the series. But I just I was dumbfounded at how many good looks Sharks got. It, like, we knew 5 minutes into game one that was over. This one, even when the Sharks were down 2-0 going into the third, I still felt like the Sharks are going to come back because they've just been too good in this game, Jerk, and it just could not happen.
Yeah, I especially with how game five and game three had gone, I was with you. I thought for sure, you know, they were going to go to the well one more time and they were going to luck out. But the theme for this game for me was just futility. I mean, you know, I don't know if it was just the first period or if it was the game as a whole, but four posts and a crossbar. I mean, that's just like out of this world bad luck, you know, and that's kind of what did it for me, is like you get to the third period and it's like, okay, they've literally hit the iron five times, which means if they were going to score, I kind of felt like they would have by now. And, you know, kudos to Vegas too. I mean, you know, they'd been caught slipping a couple times by the Sharks already in this series. And in this game specifically, they really tightened it up and didn't allow the Sharks any room to breathe.
Yeah. And I have a very vivid memory of Vlasic just not making a clear, and 5 seconds later threw Jones's five hole. And I was just like, oh, really? This is where we're going to go? Because remember, just the previous game, Bodker had a ridiculous giveaway. And I don't know, I kind of felt like that was the story of the series, Rocket, where just so many times there were so many unforced giveaways. But, I mean, I get it if they're forced and if Vegas is coming in and taking the puck left and right. But they weren't. It was just like defensive miscues by the Sharks and just giving it up for no reason.
This was what I like to call a Star Wars game, in that there was some sort of use of the force going on. I mean, every single time that the puck made its way towards Fleury, it would go off the pipe and away, or it would go off of somebody's skate, excuse me, woo, and away. And yeah, And it just like somewhere in a way, there was like some wong, 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 wong. These are not the goals you're looking for. Kind of like craziness going on. And like that, the Sharks came, were victim to it. And it is a lot like Hockey Jerk said, if they were going to score, they would have scored. But it was pretty obvious that the hockey gods were like, hold my beer. And they were out to mess with the Sharks, which I mean, I don't want to be bummed about it. The Sharks had a great night insofar as their performance. Yeah, there were a couple of gaffes. That Vlasic turnover, rare, very rare for him to have such a misplay like that. And you could tell the entire rest of the game he was trying to atone for that miscue. I mean, he really was trying to atone for it. All for naught, though. If it had gone the other way and this game had gone to seven, excuse me, the series had gone to seven and the Sharks had won and managed to pull through, I don't know if we would still be as enthusiastic for the next round, just because I don't think it gets any easier from here on out. And you look at who's left, it really, it just gets, it's an uphill climb. And if the Sharks had that much problem with Vegas, there really is not that much hope for them against better clubs. Which gives me hope that Vegas is going to get their butts served up on a silver platter, buffet style. I look forward to that.
Hashtag Winnipeg Whiteout.
Hey!
Right. Well, that would be how the series would end. I'm going to be honest. I mean, I'm looking forward to the next time these two teams face off again in the playoffs. I think you're going to see maybe the Sharks out for a little bit of vengeance, I would hope. But it should be fun. That's the way it is for the 2017-28 season. But we would be remiss if we didn't hand out our three stars of the series, or what we call...
Oh, good for you!
And number three, Hockey Jerk.
My number three stars of the series is Marc-Andre Fleury, because there were a lot of instances... Yeah, I'm going to be that guy.
He's going to be the jerk. Jerk.
Of course, you wouldn't want anything less. Marc-Andre Fleury, I mean, so many instances where the Sharks really looked like they could capitalize against Vegas's, you know, miscues, and Fleury was there to bail them out every time. I mean, so many instances. I mean, like we said, five times hitting the iron in game six. I recall one or two times in game five where the puck rolled through the crease, and you know, Couture in game three as well. And I believe it was Couture again in game six. You know, Fleury was just there, you know, all the time. And it seemed like the Sharks couldn't get past him at all. And I don't know if Marc-Andre Fleury has looked at a calendar lately, but it's the spring. He's supposed to have his meltdowns.
right.
And clearly he's not. And that's why he gets my number three star, because I think he's just been out of this world the whole playoffs. I mean, you know, first round is a 9.7 whatever save percentage, and then comes into the second round and has, I think it was a 9.35 in the second round. It's like just ridiculous how well he's been playing.
It's been impressive. I'm sure even Pittsburgh thinks it's really impressive right now. my third star for the series is going to go, even despite what I just said, a couple minutes ago, my third stars of the series are going to Vlasic and Braun. We know about what real deal James Neal can do, and he was pretty much held off the score sheet for most of this series. Not the factor you thought he would be, and Vlasic and Braun were, you know, should get credit for a lot of that. So Vlasic and Brauner, you get my number third star for the series. Rocket, who's yours?
My number three star for this series is Evander Kane. He got out of the gate a little bit rough and was a little emotional. But once he got his emotion in check, even though he was playing with, you know, half of his body hauled on by a couple of stitches and maybe some athletic tape, he did a serviceable job. And he still maintained that level of speed that we've come to kind of expect with him being on this team. And I think that if anything, he deserves a nice home. You know, I know that the Sharks have been fostering him basically until he finds his forever home. And I hope that he decides to stay in San Jose. Well, the price is right, he will. But I think that he fits in good here, and I think he should stay.
So we move on to the second. And my second star of the week, the second star of the series, of course, is Marcus Sorensen. This kid, all he does is just perform in the playoffs. I don't understand where this is in the regular season, but during the playoffs, kid sells tickets, man.
Rocket, say it with me. Regular season doesn't matter.
Yeah. This kid just shows up. I don't know how many times I was bitching and pissing and screaming and moaning about getting Sorensen time on the top power play unit in place of LeBanc. But, I mean, the kid beat out an icing call. I mean, just and scored some ridiculous goals and has a nose for that net.
Also, saved a goal in game 6, I believe it was.
Well, it felt like everybody did in game 6. There was a couple people. But anyway, Sorensen, you get my second. And I know he's here for one more season at $700,000, so make it count. I love a kid in a contract year. Rocket, your second.
My second star is going to go to Mr. Sniper himself, Logan Couture. Logan Couture, what can you say about this guy that he wouldn't say about himself? You know what I mean? What can I say about this guy that he wouldn't say about himself? He's amazing. He's incredible. Well, he's not much of either if you ask him, but his eyebrows will tell you a different story. I think that he's really matured a lot. And maybe getting his face busted in has a little bit to do with it. I don't know. But he has a way of tracking the puck, and he'll be traveling north. His eyes will be traveling south. The stick will be going west. The skates are going east. And somehow he finds the back of the net.
I feel like the puck just sort of follows him around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can very easily see him being captain of this team in 2 seasons.
If he's not, I would be surprised.
Yeah.
I don't know if he wants that.
Well, we will see. Coming on a future episode of the Pucknologist. Jerk, your second of the series.
My second star of this series is going to be Martin Jones, because like I said, for Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, when the Sharks looked like they were going to take advantage of Vegas's miscues, Fleury bailed him out. Well, same thing goes for Jones. The Sharks had so many defensive lapses in this series, and we saw Martin Jones, you know, come in and kind of save the bacon a little bit, which for me was encouraging to see when you consider what he had dealt with in the regular season, you know, his back problems, his knee problems as well. So to see him, you know, in that form that we saw 2 years ago, I mean, he really gave this team as many chances as he could for them to win.
And we move on to the number one star. And who is yours, Rocket?
Mine is going to go to Eric Fair for shoring up that fourth line with a little bit of grit, a lot of integrity, and a whole lot of, you know, wherewithal is that I've been there here before. I like the guy's game. I know that he was a rental and he probably won't be back next year, but in the scope of rentals in Teal, boy, we've had ourselves a couple of doozies, you know? what's that guy with that?
Bill Guerin?
No, okay.
That's the one that always comes to my mind.
Brian Campbell.
Brian Campbell. Who's the guy that plays for Pollock? Roman Pollock? You know. And I mean, yeah, you want to say Roman Pollock went to the Stanley Cup final. Whoopity doo. So did a lot of other people. But it could have been so apathetic, and he wasn't. He was just a breath of fresh air and the solidifying agent on that fourth line, and they were able to cause a lot of headache and frustration for their opponent, and I think he had a huge part to do with that. I'll be sad that he won't be coming back next year, because I don't think he will, but Eric Fair, I salute you.
That's strong value right there. It will be interesting to see how the fourth line shakes out. Obviously, Carlson and Sorensen will be back. It should be interesting to see who slots in between them. My numero uno for the series, and of course, it has to. In fact, there will be no debate about this. Tomáš Hertl, the kid was an absolute beast. It's the first time this kid has had a healthy playoff series, I think, ever. So, I mean, and the guy just seemed to Yeah, no doubt, right? But yeah, I mean, he seemed to get stronger as each series went on. I mean, just I can't say enough great things about Tomáš Hertl, and with the exception of, please don't cost us too much. You know, like, we have to be able to sign other people, because that kid is going to get paid between now and July 1st. Going to get paid. So, Hertl, you're the number one for the series. And with that, we close the book.
What about my number one?
Did I not get to you?
No.
Nope.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I had. Okay, I'm sorry. Jerk, go ahead. Okay, I'm going to give you your first with the caveat. It can't be somebody who wears gold.
No, I know what he's going to say. He's going to say the Post.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
My number one star is Mikhail. No, I'm just kidding. It's Tomáš Hertl. it's Tomáš Hertl, you know, for a lot of the reasons you said. I mean, he looks more physically mature. And same kind of thing with Logan Couture. The puck just follows him around. And, you know, you can always count on Hertl to get into those greasy areas in front of the net, behind the net and the corner boards, and he's going to dig the puck out. And there were so many instances where Hertl gets that puck out, feeds it to Couture, and it's a grade A scoring chance. And the two of them together, more specifically, is going to be something fun to watch. But, you know, Hertl, he's been healthy all year. He's doing a lot of his scoring away from Joe Thornton, which was a major concern. And like I said, he's more physically mature, which I think will benefit him, because we've seen guys who come in and they have a big body and don't use it, you know? And so to see Hertl, you know, hitting guys, and to see him get down in the trenches and fight for pucks in the corner, it's awesome to see. And, you know, I'm not, considering how the first year of his 2-year bridge deal went, it makes me optimistic that he's not going to break the bank, but I still think that he shouldn't be like fleeced either. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I hope it really works out for both sides. Cause I gotta be honest. I think next season, it would not surprise me in the least if the top line for the Sharks is Couture centering Hertl and Kane. That would be just a fantastic top line. Physical, speedy, inventive, that nose for the net, all three guys. That'll be able to make that happen, Wilson, while we're here. Okay. Anyway, we move on to Shark Bites. And basically the only thing to talk about is what's going to happen. The boys had dressing room clean out today. And a few quotes, Couture is eligible to sign an extension on July 1st, and he wants to be in Santa's long term, is what he said today. Joel Ward admitting that he thinks his time is up. I believe we heard something similar from Hansen, that just, you know, the fit wasn't working, which I think we all knew for quite some time.
What gave it away?
Yeah. DeBoer said that Burns was dealing with neck and back issues. Yeah, there was clearly something off with Burnsy during this series, that without a doubt. As we mentioned earlier, Donskoy was playing through hip and foot issues. We all know about Joe Thornton, and basically had the exact same ACL and MCL tears in his right knee, which were the exact same he had last season in his left knee. I mean, this poor schmo. Tomáš Hertl also expressing a desire to remain with the Sharks, and he's also eligible July 1st. He'll be an RFA. Same goes with Tierney. One that kind of stands out, though, for dressing room cleanout day today, though, guys, is Evander Kane being non-committal about his return. Now, I get it as well. Feelings are a little raw right now, of course, after getting trounced. But, you know, I mean, Rocket, at least he's not pulling a Belfour and espousing about how great San Jose is, and, oh, yeah, I can't wait to, and then, you know, 3 days later signing with the Dallas Stars or something. But your thoughts on all the information that came out of cleanup day?
Well, yeah, I mean, as far as Evander Kane goes, I'm sure it's smarter for him to hold his cards close to the vest, especially if he's still kind of if other teams have seen his player performance and how he spent his time on ice here in San Jose, if other clubs are shopping him, we don't know that. So if he gets a good paycheck from another club and he decides to follow the money, hey, I mean, I know guys have been with this club a lot longer who took the same route and don't have much animosity pointed at them. So I can't really fault him for doing that. I will say, you know, like I've said before, I hope he does stay though. That would be nice. But I think it's smart for him to play the cards close to the vest. For Wordo to say that his time is up here, I'm glad that he sees the writing on the wall. I think that he knows he was a transition guy and the next shift is here to take over and that the club is in safe hands. And he did a good job while he was here. But yeah, he's probably not a good fit for this place anymore. And Hansen, well, Hansen hasn't been popular since Mbop was on the charts. So,
hey, now that's good knowledge right there. That's a good callback.
I try. Once every 6 months, I have one. So, you know, I am surprised, however, that Paul Martin didn't thank me personally for the Chipotle coupons that he must have found in his locker when he cleaned it out. Because, you know, I am the burrito queen. But, you know, we'll get to that later.
Well, I mean, Hockey Jerk, how are you going to tackle the offseason? I mean, obviously, there's some guys have already mentioned that they're interested in staying, but there's guys that are obviously need to be leaving. We see that we're going to, I think Cap Friendly had it or somewhere around 20 million, but I mean, if you just look at the numbers that come off July 1, Thornton gives you 8 million. Obviously, they're going to, I don't want to say obviously. I don't know that if they're going to make a play for Thornton or not. And if they do, I think it's going to be at like, I don't know, $3.5 million. It's going to be significantly reduced. And Thornton's already come out and said he's willing to take a haircut in order to, you know, he's getting his money. I think it's all about just playing right now and playing, doing what he can to help San Jose get a cup.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, like, really, how can you justify giving him, you know, anything over like $4 million when he hasn't played a whole lot? Now, the book is written on what Joe Thornton can do, but at the same time, when you're a UFA, it's very much, what have you done for me lately? And not by his own fault, but, you know, not a whole lot has been done lately by Joe Thornton. Again, not at his fault, but the Evander Kane thing, I mean, yeah, pretty non-committal today, but, you know, reading, you know, some of the quotes that came out on Sunday night, you know, he was asked about it and he said, you know, he believes in the group of guys, he believes in the team. And I don't know, I don't really think you would say that you believe in a team if you don't plan on being there in 2.5 months. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And the injuries, I mean, aside from, I mean, Burns and Donskoy, you know, those kind of make sense, but like the Jones one, like whether it was still lingering from earlier in the season or not, it definitely looked like he got over what he was dealing with come playoff time, you know. And then Evander Kane, we know what he was dealing with as well. He you know, he didn't put up a lot of goals, but I would say he still made a pretty solid impact. You know, the summer is going to be interesting. A lot of individuals have, you know, kind of speculated on the Sharks cap figures and who's coming off and who's staying. And, you know, you got to remember the salary cap is going up at least $2 million and maybe more, because the Vegas Golden Knights coming in, it adds a whole nother wrinkle to, you know, how revenue and that sort of stuff breaks down. And I feel like as a whole, ratings were higher for hockey games on, you know, NBC in the US and Sportsnet in Canada. And I think the Canadian dollar is doing much better as well. I think there's a lot of factors here to consider, but I do think as well that people are overvaluing the RFAs the Sharks have. I mean, like I've said it before, Hurdle, great year this year, no doubt, career year, regular season and playoffs. But the first year of this 2-year deal was a lot more of the same. And not that that's bad, but that's not really deserving of a raise, if you ask me. So, you know, there's no doubt in my mind he will get a raise, but I don't think it's going to be as much as people are anticipating. And then Chris Tierney, I like Chris Tierney. I know a lot of people, you know, who work with us over at Teal Town USA After Dark, they like Chris Tierney as well, but one season out of four that just so happens to be better than okay. I mean, it's not a whole lot of negotiating wiggle room, if you ask me. I mean, maybe at most he gets what Donskoy got, but, you know, seeing people pegging him at $3.5 million, like if he's going to ask for $3.5 million, let him go, because you can get somebody to replace that.
How much do you think they could replace him with Barkley Goodrow for a lot less? Like, how much less would Barkley Goodrow take to take up Chris Tierney's roster spot?
Well, it's a tough... I mean, Barkley Goodrow still signed for another year, which, or maybe another 2 years, which is good, but...
One more year.
But the issue is, I mean, as well as he played at that position, he's not a natural center. And so I feel like that would cause, you know, some matchup issues as well. And, you know, I definitely think Barkley Goodrow's in the conversation for a roster spot next year. But, you know, the Sharks are weird because they have all these natural centers and throw them on the wing. But then you get a guy like Hurdle and, you know, like Barkley Goodrow and Ward, who pretty much only play wing. And it's like, hey, why don't you try center and see what happens? So
I think something that we need to consider, too, is that we're not dealing with the Doug Wilson of old, who right. would limit his deals to 5 years. In order to limit his deal to 5 years, he would throw in a full-blown no move. He would overpay, at least in my opinion. He would I'm not going to give you the term, but I'm going to give you extra money. And I think he's come around to saying, you know what, I'm more willing to give term now. And I see, just looking at the numbers, I don't think that Tierney will stay for anything less than $2 million, simply because Carlson got $2 million in 3 years, whereas Tierney just got the little show me deal for $700K. So I bet you Tierney is probably going to be looking for $2 million. Donskoy is getting 1.9 though, so that doesn't work necessarily in Tierney's favor. But I think Carlson's deal does. So I could see like Tierney getting like, I don't know, 1.8.
I'll say this, $2 million is the most I'm comfortable giving Tierney.
Absolutely.
Sure.
I'd be fine if you just, you know, essentially doubled him and said, okay, you know what, we're going to give you a mil and a half.
Yeah, and can do that over 2 or 3 years, and it's fine.
Yeah, and remember, the kid's still only 23, so you can give him like a four-year deal or something.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we have to remember too. I mean, for all that's said, this young guy, Marcus Sorensen. I mean, Marcus Sorensen is 26. He's not ancient, but you know, he's not a young guy either. I mean, 23, granted, 23 is pretty much make or break as an NHLer, but you know, Tierney's still right there. He still has time to show his worth.
Absolutely. And all this talk about Tierney and then Goodrow, remember, there's going to be a guy like, coming into camp, there's going to be a guy like, say, I don't know, Dylan Gambrell pushing for a spot. You know,
I think
there are going to be guys that are going to be pushing, you know, higher guys up and at least keeping everybody honest.
I do think as well, especially if Eric Fair doesn't come back and, you know, say you want to get Gambrell in the Barracuda or whatever, don't sleep on Rourke Chartier. I mean, he's had two really good years with the Barracuda and has fought through a lot of adversity himself. I would not be surprised if Rourke Chartier starts the year as the 4C next year.
Wow.
That's okay. Fair.
So, dear Lord. wouldn't be as we could not go on a show without invoking. So anyway, that's the deal. It's going to be quite fun to see how Doug Wilson tackles this offseason going into July 1. I mean, notables, obviously Thornton, Evander Kane, but we should get Joel Ward off the books. Hanson goes UFA. That frees up $5 million right there. And then another $2 million if Eric Fair doesn't stick around. The thing that we also need to consider as well is a couple big contracts kick in next season. So Vlasic goes from $4.2 to $7 million, and Jones goes from $3 million to $5.75 million.
The nice thing about cap friendly is that the cap space number you see at the bottom includes those increases. That's the nice thing.
Yeah. So I'm real real interested to see how this is going to turn out. The and again, like Jerk said, we are going to see the budget pop up just a scotch this offseason. So, I mean, Wilson, work your magic. If you can somehow figure out a way to get Kane and Tavares and Teal next season, I mean, boy, I think that I would think that would sell some tickets right there.
Yeah, and
just saying.
And you know, the Sharks, you know, there's no question too what else they do that's not totally obvious. I mean, I still think Paul Martin and Mikhail Bodker both play out their deals in San Jose, but you know, if I see buyouts seldomly happen. I mean, if I'm the Sharks, specifically with Paul Martin, you've got one more year left. Why not just eat that one more year instead of buying him out and being on the hook for 2 years at less dollars, or see if you can convince a team to take him in a deal. But even if you're doing that, you're going to have to give up a good piece in order to entice that team to take his deal.
Or
hello, Arizona.
Yeah, right. Or at the very least, it'll be one of those things where you can package Paul Martin with a piece, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was one of those ones that, well, besides this, you're on the hook for like half of Martin's salary, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, there's totally limitless possibilities. I'm not opposed to seeing like Donskoy and a Dylan DeMello thrown in for a better defenseman. I mean, there's so many options that the Sharks can take at this point. And, you know, without getting too much into it, I mean, look at Tampa Bay. You know, they have Ryan McDonagh, who is a top defenseman on any other team, on their middle pair. Like, that's what you need to model after.
Completely agree. So let's finish off the Pucknologists. We can go around to borrow a phrase from After Dark, the wraparound. Washington finally vanquishes Pittsburgh in what seems like the first time ever on God's green earth.
Yeah.
So yeah, good for you, Ovi.
And there was much rejoicing. Yay.
Yeah. Pittsburgh Jerk, obviously a little upset about that one.
Yeah, I killed him. He's gone.
He's been licked to death by Brad Marchand, right?
Yay.
So Tampa versus Washington in the East is the matchup we look forward to. And of course, I don't understand how there's like 3 days between game six and game seven between the Jets and the Preds, but so be it. You know, building availability is a pain, evidently. So the Golden Knights in the Western Conference Finals will be facing the winner of that one. So just real quick, who are your picks for the Stanley Cup Final Rocket?
I'm going to say Tampa and Winnipeg. Can I do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
But who wins the whole thing then?
Oh, hell, Tampa.
Okay, cool. Jerk?
So in the East, I have Tampa Bay. And then in the West, it's literally anybody who's not Vegas. As for who wins, well, I am unsure. But
yeah.
I will say this. If Washington can find a way to beat the Lightning, then they're going to win the cup.
Because it's a bold big cut. Let's see if it pays off.
Because if Tampa Bay, of the five teams that are left in this thing, Tampa Bay is the best team. And if Washington can beat them, then they're going to be on like an emotional adrenaline high that's unlike anything they've seen in the Alex Ovechkin era.
Until Ovi proves otherwise, Washington can't have nice things. So I'm going to take Tampa, but and this is just me being me. This is just me being putt guy. In my final, I'm going to take Peg over the Bay. Again, bold move, Cotton. Jets over Lightning. Let's see how that plays out. Hockey Jerk, final thoughts, where the people can find you, because remember, you're not going to be talking to this audience necessarily for about 5 months.
Well, now, last when we recorded our wrap-up for round one, I said the next time you'll hear us is after round two, and I hope it's not the last time you hear from us, and it's the last time that you're all hearing from us, which is sad, but you don't need to fear, because there's such thing as Twitter, and if you go to any of our accounts, you can follow, And
have you increased your subscription price, or is it going to remain the same over the summer?
There is a summer discount. It's only $12.98 to subscribe.
Does that include interaction?
It does. Full package across the board until preseason starts. Do it now because you don't want to miss out. But, you know, we'll still be around. Obviously, we all have other, you know, other things that we do. We all are still going to, you know, bust on each other through Twitter. And by all means, you can get in on it by following me, the Winnipeg Jets bandwagon jerk, which is subject to change depending on how Thursday's game goes, @hockey_jerk. Back to you.
Rocket, your final thoughts on where the people may find you.
My final thoughts. You know, this may be the end of the season, but it's not the end of the availability on social media for us. Like Jerk said, there's also the Twitter machine. And I'm pretty sure that I'm just going to miss talking to Jerk and you at some point, that we're just going to call a meeting and record it. And hell, we might even broadcast it live. Just to check in midsummer and talk about sunblock and mini golf and how many household chores and tasks we got done while there was no hockey to talk about. And also I need the updates on the San Jose Beer League standings and how that's going. So, you know, there's plenty of hockey. There's plenty of Sharks camaraderie left in this year. And I hope that y'all stick around to follow the shenanigans, because the shenaniganery is not over. My name is Rocket Backhander. You can find me hanging out on Twitter, and I literally hang out on Twitter. That's all I do all day. Capital R, capital B, little Ackhander 76 on the Twitter machine. You can also check out my photographs. I do actually have a summer job working over at the baseball park, the First Tennessee Park, where the Nashville Sounds AAA club plays. Now, if you don't know anything about minor league baseball, that's cool. But if you do know a little bit about where Sharks Ice is, you'll understand that Sharks Ice shares the same parking lot as the San Jose Giants, who are the AAA affiliate to the San Francisco Giants. For my East Bay fans, the Oakland A's AAA affiliate is none other than the Nashville Sounds. So I am not necessarily jumping ship from the Bay Area so much as I am trying to grasp desperately onto this little AAA dinghy that keeps me connected to the Bay Area at whatever cost necessary here in Nashville. It's a wonderful experience. And yeah, you should check it out, because I take lots of pictures of the park, and there's mascots involved. It's fun. And that's over on Instagram, Rocket Backhander, one word. AJ?
Facts matter. So quick correction. San Jose Giants are actually a Class A, not AAA, but just want to make sure.
Oh, hell. You know, I'm sorry. The Class A or no, if they are a Class A and not a AAA, they need a better stadium, because Municipal Stadium is very, man, it is nowhere near as luxe as First Tennessee Park.
Yeah, but you should see the building. Yeah, but you got to see the park that the AAA affiliate plays in, because
it's just a shed, right?
No, it's much, much nicer, because, I mean, that's AAA is one step away from the bigs.
Okay, so okay, okay. Sorry, I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah, no, it gets nicer the more A's, evidently, that you put in your classification.
Got it.
So with me, you know, I was going to save this for Twitter, but I mean, I can just do it here, I think. I just want to let everyone know I officially resign from the Pucknologist. No, I'm kidding.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry, I had to have a little fun. No, I'm going to the Athletic, actually. I'm going to the Athletic. So gonna miss you all. Yeah, be behind all them paywalls. At me, bitches. You can't get to me.
I'll just get in cozy with one of your subscribers, and I'll have them Dropbox me everything.
That works.
There you go.
Looking at you, Chris.
yes, Chris. At Chris, at Landy.
Yeah. So final thoughts. I think the Sharks, if you go back to last September, beginning of October, a lot of the prognosticators counted Jose out. Didn't even think they would make the playoffs this season. I was not one of those people. Yeah, see, if you go back to our preview, I had the Sharks in like top three. I thought, or actually, no, let me correct that. I might have had them in wild card, but I definitely had them making the playoffs. But you know, everybody had Edmonton winning. So what are you going to do? But I mean, Wilson, continue working your magic and just pay attention, kids, because between now and July 1st, things could get really interesting in Sharkland, or should I say in Teal Town, USA, right?
So my question for you is there, AJ, is there a desire for you to re-sign with the team?
Yeah, okay, I've changed my mind. I'll stay with it.
we'll give you a no trade.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what it is I just don't have the time or the inclination to go and like change a bunch of my graphics on my social media banners and all that. So it's like, it's going to take too long to like switch that to The Athletic. So I guess I'll stick around. It's easier. And speaking of the Soch, you can find me AJ_Strong, Instagram, Twitter, also doing a little gramming for Teal Town USA. And do us a favor, subscribe there because we, I think we just broke 400, which was kind of nice. It's been a while and hadn't paid attention to it. And we started doing a little more content there. So go check that out. Every once in a while, we'll go live. In fact, I think our last live story was Puck Guy shaving off his playoff beard at like 1 a.m. So that's the kind of compelling content you can find on the Teal Town USA Instagram. So go check that out. Help us out. Subscribe on SoundCloud. We need some more subscribers because if we get more subscribers, we can do more fun things. And as always, YouTube. Subscribe to the Teal Town USA SoundCloud and iTunes and Google Play and Stitcher and TuneIn. But most of all, YouTube. So thanks for listening. Show 49 is over. The season for the Sharks is over. Unless something ridiculous happens, you will hear from us following the first week of preseason San Jose Sharks hockey in September. For anything else, TealTownUSA.com.
Off season.
Hello.
We're talking off season.